Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Kids are back in public schools today in the Boston public schools as COVID worries continue, and five major mayoral candidates try to distinguish themselves on who is best for kids and for schools. So now school buses have emerged at the center of that fight after BPS started warning families last week that their child's bus might not show up this morning. At a televised debate last night, acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey sought to assure parents that the city had reached a contract extension with the bus drivers union that had her, quote, encouraged about bus coverage today. So how did it go? And how did the day go in general? WBUR education reporter Carrie Young was at a Boston school bus stop at 6:45 this morning. Joins us now. Carrie, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, as always.
All right, let's start with those buses, Carrie. Was acting Mayor Kim Janey's optimism founded?
Yeah, I mean, the buses did run this morning, although there were some delays to report. Quite a few, actually, at the bus stop that I was at today. However, I did just get some data from the district that shows that they did better than years past when it comes to dropping the kids off on time. That's the on-time performance, as they say. So this year, it was about 57% of buses that got to schools on time. And the five-year average, apparently, according to the district, is about 48%. So some improvement there today.
So what bus stop did you visit, Carrie, and what did you hear from parents while you were there?
Yeah, I headed over to Dorchester this morning and hung out with a lot of people at a very big bus stop around Geneva Avenue and Westville Street. I talked to a crossing guard first just to see how things were going. She didn't want to be recorded, but she did say that she watched a lot of families this morning wait for a pretty long time. One of them was Shaharzard Powell and her son. The bus that he was supposed to get on heading to Brighton today was supposed to arrive at 6:30 this morning. And by the time I caught up with her, it was already 45 minutes late.
It's extremely frustrating only because when you have other children, I had to actually have like a friend of mine make sure my other son got to school. And then I have two other children that was like had to get dragged out of bed at like 5 something in the morning.
So the bus did end up arriving at around 7:30 this morning. It's not like it didn't come, but it was about an hour late altogether. I will say, though, you know, while a lot of people were frustrated about the wait time, a lot of people were also mostly excited about going back to school, and you could feel that among the students, too, like fifth grader Zariah Simmons.
I'm excited and nervous because there are going to be some maybe new people in my class.
Yeah, and she also, you know, mentioned to me that she was just excited to meet new people and learn new things. Her mom shared those sentiments, and she said that, you know, she was generally excited to see both of her kids go back into the school buildings full time. She is worried about COVID. She said that's always been on her mind, but for now, she just told me, like, she's mostly just trusting that her kids are going to do the right thing with masking and sanitizing, and that the district is going to keep its COVID safety promises, too.
And briefly, do we know anything else about how the day unfolded? Did it go okay?
As far as I know, district-wide, there haven't been any like major systemic issues. But, you know, a lot of schools, depending on when it started, a lot are still just letting out. So we'll keep watching.
So I did want to ask you about a virtual parent protest earlier this week that was aimed at the Department of Early and Secondary Education. It was from parents who were concerned that the state's elimination of a virtual learning option puts kids at risk. Can you tell us what the parents want?
So this group of parents is a group of parents in Boston. They organized this because a lot of them have kids with very complex and fragile medical conditions. I spoke with one of the members again today, actually, Bethany Van Delft Maffey. She has a daughter who has some developmental delays, and she also has a history of really severe respiratory illnesses. So she says that the stakes feel really high for her family right now. In fact, she actually decided to keep her daughter out of school today because the school told her that they can't guarantee that she won't be in contact with unmasked people.
We don't see a safe way to send her in. We're begging the school and the district to give us options to keep her safe. If they won't give us a remote option, We're begging for options to keep her body safe at school. They're turning down those options.
Now, Van Delft and others do technically have options to stay out of physical classrooms. One of those is homeschooling. That's always been an option. Another option that's been around for a while is the two virtual schools that are here in the state. But parents in this group say that those aren't good options for them either. And so what they are demanding from the district is that their individual schools offer a remote option. Because if they were to choose homeschooling or the other virtual schools, that would mean unenrolling their kids from the current school that they're in, which in Boston is a really big deal because the district uses a partial lottery system when it comes to school assignments. So if you unenroll, that means you lose your seat in a place that you and your child may really love. And officials with BPS say their hands are really tied in this situation, mostly because of a state policy that, you know, almost completely takes virtual learning off the table for districts. Only 7 districts were allowed to have a virtual option this fall, but even then, those programs have to be considered as their own schools. So it's not extending that physical classroom into the remote environment like these parents want. So it's a tough situation.
So, Carrie, what's the one thing you'll keep your eye on most closely over the next week or so?
Ooh, I would have to say I would like to, you know, see what happens with COVID transmission rates. You know, more people are going to be in close contact now with each other. So we'll be keeping an eye on those in the next week or two for sure.
All right. We will continue to check in with you too. WBUR education reporter Carrie Young. Thanks, Carrie.
You're welcome.
Okay. So we have firmly established that school is back underway. So we have a word problem for you. New teacher stress plus will I fit in? Plus pandemic anxiety, plus tough year of learning last year equals big challenges for kids and families. There will undoubtedly be a heavy focus on the core subjects this year, including math. And helping kids through that can be complicated by the fact that kids learn math now in a way often unrecognizable to their parents. So are our kids ready for the big 5 subjects, including math this year? How do you help them? What questions do you have or techniques have you developed? And do the stakes feel higher this year, given where we are in the pandemic? Call us. Join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. We have 2 guests with us today who say that teachers, parents, and kids can work together to take on tough subjects, catch kids back up to speed, and help them thrive in the classroom. Hillary Kreisberg is director of the Center of Mathematical Achievement at Lesley University, and Matthew Beyrenevand, the mathematics coordinator for Chelmsford Public Schools. They are authors most recently of the book Partnering with Parents in Elementary School Math. Hillary and Matthew, welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have
you. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back. Thank you.
It's great to have you back. And I noticed, by the way, you tweeting earlier, it was almost 2 years ago exactly that we had you on before.
2 years ago tomorrow.
Amazing. And so what a 2 years. Let's start there. What a 2 years, Hillary. What are you expecting from classroom learning in this very unusual year? Will it be business as usual or is it going to be harder?
I think it's going to be a mixture of both. I think we have to give ourselves grace. We are in the middle of a pandemic. And at the same time, I think we need to move forward as well and continue the learning.
And Matthew, is there... I pause. This almost sounds like I'm asking the same question, but I'm not. What is the education imperative this year? Is it get every piece of this year's content delivered to the kids? Is it catch up from last year? Is it support social emotional learning? What is the imperative this year in the classroom?
So first of all, I do believe the social and emotional well-being of the students has to be the top priority. But second really is focusing on grade level instruction. We know that there has been interrupted learning over the last year, but we cannot be pausing and saying, well, we're in a 5th grade class, but we really need to move back to 3rd grade to see what you've missed. So it's a difficult challenge for teachers to be able to do this year, as well as partners, but we believe that it can be done and done well.
So Hillary, I want to pick up on this partner word. The two of you write for parents and educators. Is there a partnership between parents and educators? Is that what it is?
There has to be a partnership between parents and educators. Otherwise, our students can't succeed. So yes, there is a partnership. Has the partnership been visible in every school district? No. And so that's where we have been itching to support parents and also support teachers and leaders in how to create that team effort.
So I do want to ask listeners, was today first day of school for you or sometime in the last couple of weeks for your kids? Are you thinking about your partnership with educators this year? What do you want from it? What do you want to bring to it? What questions do you have? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Matthew, I remember the last time the two of you were here, I felt like the two of you presented teachers as in the driver's seat and parents as sort of offering an assist, if I can mix metaphors, in this partnership. I also know, though, you wrote your most recent book after thinking hard about how the pandemic affected the parent-teacher relationship. So has your thinking about that partnership changed? What's new or different now?
Well, based upon the research that we have done, especially during this COVID-19, we found that parents often feel intimidated, frustrated, worried, and confused about their child's learning. And ultimately, what they're looking for from their partnership within the schools is they want to be a support mechanism to feel helpful, intelligent, confident, and familiar. And it's on both parties to forge that relationship so parents can be playing an active role and schools and districts share what the parents can be doing to support their children, especially in mathematics.
So, Hillary, why that jumble of anxious emotions, and how do educators help parents reduce that anxiety and sense of mystery?
Well, I think the reality is that many students have inadvertently been positioned as responsible for parents' education about math instruction, and this is pre-COVID, when it really needs to be the school's job to do this. And so I think it's up to educators and leaders this year to establish that proactive communication with families so that they can feel and play that active role that they need to have to be able to support their children.
And what should educators be communicating to parents about math education, Matthew?
Well, it's more than just saying this week we're working on fractions or decimals. Parents want to be helpful. And so often parents, as you said in the open here, they don't necessarily understand the way we're teaching the math. So families need to learn what things should I be doing or what things should I not be doing? Because many times they want to go back to the rote memorization approach while how they learn math. And that's actually not benefiting their children.
So I want to go back to the rote memorization, Hillary. I understand that. So tell us, why is it so different the way the kids are learning it now?
I know. It feels so different. And honestly, what we're learning right now is not new. So I want to dispel that. A lot of the instruction is what has been happening in other countries that are high performing in mathematics. And we really just need to help parents understand that math instruction changes just like everything else, and to keep up with technology and automation and the need for critical thinkers in our society, the way that we teach math has had to shift in order to address those needs.
1-800-423-8255 to join this conversation. Joel's on the line in Somerville. Hi, Joel.
Hi, how's it going? I don't teach in Somerville. It's where I live. I want to share, I am a teacher, and we tried the experiment of remote learning last year, and basically what we found out is that the risks weren't as severe as we'd worried. We worried there were going to be these huge outbreaks in schools. Didn't really happen. What happens is we get a case, you know, every couple of months, every couple of weeks or so, people quarantine, life goes on. In terms of the kids complying with masks, it's really not a problem. It's easier to get kids to follow the rules than adults, so we're able to do it in a relatively safe way. And then there's just the cost involved of remote learning, which is that, you know, not just the academics. My personal experience as a teacher is the kids suffer terribly in terms of not just the academics and content, but the social, emotional stuff, getting the structure. All these things we saw just had this enormous hidden cost we didn't even account for. So I think in-person learning is really important to follow through.
Thank you.
We've learned from an experiment last year. Thanks.
Thanks for that testimonial, Joel. So Matthew, Joel talks about social emotional learning there. He did not, it sounds like, feel that was a good experience with virtual learning. I do want to ask, though, was there anything in teaching techniques for teaching math that educators developed or partnered with parents on during virtual learning that can be carried back into the classroom in person now?
That is an excellent question. In fact, last year, my role is the math coordinator within the Chelmsford Public Schools. But last year, I actually spent quite a few months teaching seventh grade math. And I was learning a lot of new skills myself about how to use the technology to support the learning. And at the end of the year, one of the things that we did was said, well, we're going to be going back to in-class learning, but what are some of those things that we learned, some of those apps, some of the technology that we can keep using to support student learning? And there are quite a few things that we can do. In regards to supporting parents, one of the things that we really like to promote is the idea of growth mindset. Within the mathematics field, we look at STEM, science, technology, engineering, they love doing it. And then in math, people are so willing to say, I can't do it or I hate it. So we really want to promote talking to parents as well as students about saying, if you don't have anything good to say about it, let's not say anything at all, because parents are the role models for the kids.
So what else, Hillary, do parents need to do in this partnership? Can parents do in this partnership to support their kids' quantitative learning?
Well, I think most students have started school at this point. So if by the end of the month you have not heard correspondence with your child's teacher about what your child's learning in math throughout the year, and really in particular right now, take the initiative, reach out to your teachers, and let them know that you want to play an active role in your child's math learning. Ask for an overview of the current unit that tells you about the math and specifically gives you the language that you need to be able to talk to your child at home about what they're learning, and get example questions that you can ask your child to support what they're doing.
So, Matthew, let's take this quote-unquote not good at math thing head on. We often hear kids, and we know there is research to suggest girls later in primary school, sort of develop this sense that I can't do math, that my brain doesn't work that way. Take that one head on for us.
Absolutely. I love the way you phrase that question, because within our society, we would never go somewhere and announce to everybody, I don't know how to read or I can't write. But yet if you go somewhere and you say, I don't love math, you'll get high fives from that. And our society accepts that. And we believe, Hillary and I both, that everybody has the ability to learn mathematics. We learn it differently, in the sense that we focus on conceptual understanding now more because of all the technologies we have, and less than procedural knowledge, in that we're doing that rote memorization. But we believe that everyone has that opportunity to learn math at a high level with the supports that we can offer them within public schools.
So Hillary, go.
I was just going to say, what Matthew's saying is that math is not a gene. It's not a genetic code that we're built with. Everyone can learn math.
So let me ask you then, let's illustrate this conceptual learning idea. So let's take, you know, old school long division, the way we would have learned it.
We still learn that, but we learn that in sixth grade now, rather than learning that in second and third grade like we might have done.
So what's the conceptual learning in second and third grade now that you get instead as a kid?
So now we understand the relationship between multiplication and division, and we understand that they're inverses of one another so that we can use them to help each other. We draw pictures or use concrete tools, things that I can actually touch and play with, so that I can develop an understanding of what division even is. That way, when I get to those steps later on in long division, I understand what I'm doing. I'm not just doing a procedure because the teacher told me this is what I need to do.
All right,
and
so
just to follow up on that, here's a concrete example that actually just happened with my own son this week, where we were doing a problem, 12 times 4. And instead of having him just memorize it and say, oh, 48, because that's what I memorized, he said, well, I know that 12 is 10 plus 2, so 4 times 10 is 40, and 2 times 4 is 8, and 40 plus 8 is 48. Literally, tears were in my eyes because he truly understood the math as opposed to just memorizing it.
So let's stay with that for a second, Matthew. You just told us something that happened, I'm picturing your kitchen table, right, after dinner. What are some things that families can be doing in the apartment, in the house, after a meal, playing games, helping their kids learn, helping their kids feel confident about learning quantitative subjects?
I'll give you three good examples. Number one, avoiding the dinner topic question of how was your day?
Dun,
because
dun, dun.
It usually ends with good. And that's it. Instead, tell me one thing you learned in math class today, and then find out how you can support the child with that. Second is that we do a lot of reading and promote reading within our houses. Why not try to find some books that have mathematics embedded into it? There are so many great books, Bedtime Math, 12 Ways to Get 11, 17 Kings and 42 Elephants, great books that have the math built into it to support it. And finally, playing games such as, you know, Monopoly, Prime Climb, 24, Payday, that have the mathematics built into it so it becomes part of your family life.
Okay, I have to admit, I now want to know what the 12 ways are to get 11. So you, you have piqued my interest there. So Hillary, talk directly to parents now. Anxiety, well, big change.
Yes, lots of anxiety. Yeah. I hear from parents lately lots of worry about learning loss and that their children are falling behind and how are we going to catch them up. I want you to shift your perspective. You can't lose something that you haven't learned or didn't have. What happened was interrupted learning, and it wasn't just here. It was everywhere. The entire world had interrupted learning. And so your child didn't lose anything. In fact, I bet you can think of lots of things your children gained: persistence, technology skills, other things. If I go to the gym and I work out and then I take a break, or if I work out even less over a small segment of time,
just a few seconds left.
When I get back into the gym, my muscle memory kicks in and allows me to get back where I was with some practice. That's what's going to happen this year. Our muscle memory is going to kick in.
That is super encouraging. And that is Hillary Kreisberg, director of the Center of Mathematical Achievement at Lesley University, along with Matthew Beiranavand, mathematics coordinator for Chelmsford Public Schools. Hillary and Matthew, great to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.